This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, it's RÚV English Radio. I'm Darren Adam. Thanks very much for joining me today. I'm back at the East Iceland Heritage Museum in Eylstadur, back once again with Elsa Gudni Björgvinsdóttir, who is the director of the museum, and I promised we'd make a return visit to talk about the permanent exhibition which is here at the museum, and it's all about the reindeer in East Iceland. We had a conversation at the university here in Eylstadur a few months ago about the reindeer in East Iceland, and I did not know until that conversation that East Iceland is the only part of the country where you find reindeer. Elsa, good to talk to you once again. And I think that surprises a lot of people, because outside of Iceland you might think that there are reindeer everywhere, but they're only in this part of the country.
Yes, they are. They were imported to Iceland in the 18th century, and actually they put them on several different places. Some of them were put in Reykjanes, some in Westman Islands, and up in the north, and then also here in the east. And they only survived here in this part of the country. So they've become a very big part of our culture and, yes, and nature in this area.
Why here? What was it about the climate or the earth that made it possible for them to survive?
Yes, I think so. You could say the circumstances were best for them here. Mm. Of course, they weren't followed much. I mean, they didn't do any researches. They just put them there and wanted to see what happened. Yes. Maybe they were hunted in some places as well too much, but at least this is the situation now. They are only here in the east part.
How do they get on here in East Iceland? Is there a balance now between their population and the human population? Do reindeer and man get on well?
Yes, I would say so. Of course, sometimes they jump over fences and eat things that they shouldn't eat, like trees from some forest farms. But they are very closely monitored, and they are counted each year by scientists. And based on that information, they decide how many you're allowed to hunt each year. And of course, they are hunted. Some people think that's very sad. But of course, you have to keep the herds in the right size, because it, as you said, it has to be a balance,
yes,
for them. Otherwise, they will become too many, and that won't be good as well.
And are they tame? Are they used to human company by now, in a way that maybe reindeer might not be in other places?
Sometimes, like during winter, they come all the way down to the towns. Mm. Like in some areas, for example, in Djúpivogur, which is in the southeast part, there are herds in the town. I mean, they I've seen very nice pictures of the football field with a herd of reindeer. So I guess they are quite used to humans,
yes,
but of course other ones, they stay up higher up in the mountains.
There's the other thing about where we are in Eylstadur and East Iceland, is that you are never very far from the mountains. So we'll move around to look at some of the other exhibits here, and there are some, I guess these are tracking devices, what looks like an old television aerial, some early GPS equipment, some other quite old-fashioned looking devices. This would be part of the machinery that's been used to track the reindeer?
Yes. The East Iceland Natural History Institute has managed monitoring and research of the reindeer, and they, like I said, they gather information about them. They fly over the mountains and take pictures of the herds and try to estimate how many they are. And sometimes they put these things on them, the GPS monitors, so they can track them and see where they are living.
There's a lot of science involved in making sure that everyone who needs to have the data has the data.
Yeah, definitely.
We have artifacts made of reindeer horn. There are some needles, there's a knife, there's a horse whip as well in this. At least the handle is made from a horn.
Yeah, these are some old items we have or had in our collection when we started this exhibition. Those are just everyday things from farms here in the area where they have made the handles out of reindeer horn. Because of course, and one of the things that I find very interesting about reindeer is that their antlers fall off each year. So when you're walking up in the Highlands, you might come across an antler, and people used to use them in different things.
I saw a video once of a reindeer shaking its antlers off. It's an incredible sight because they just suddenly realize that's it, they've got to go, and they just, they shake them and they fall off completely.
Yeah, and actually both the males and the females lose their antlers. That's not actually, that's special for these reindeer. It's not like that in all countries or for all
It's quite a sight because you think the animal's in tremendous distress, and of course it's not.
Yeah, no. And then they grow again, and I always find it a little amazing that they can grow. I mean, all of this, those big antlers each year.
Well, we go around to the left here, and this is like walking into the bar in some old British hotel because you've got so many antlers up on the wall here, and so many different types as well. Is that the right word to you? I mean, this one is huge. Still has fur on it.
Yeah, and first the fur falls off, and after that the antlers are just white. You see the antlers, and then they fall off. And it's actually quite interesting how nature has thought of everything, because the males and the females, they lose their antlers in different time of the year. The grown males lose their antlers in November or December. But the females, which are pregnant, they lose their antlers after they have had their calves in May. So that means that during winter, the hardest time of the year, they have their antlers. They are higher in the hierarchy, you could say, and of course have better access to food. They can dig some food up from the snow.
So. And we've been talking about the antlers. We shouldn't forget what's on the other end of the animal as well, the hooves, which are really helpful when these animals swim. I didn't think of them as swimmers, but there's a lot of water in Iceland, a lot of areas where they need to swim. The hooves can help.
Yeah, actually, reindeer are quite good swimmers, and they can swim long distances over rivers and lakes, and one of the keys to that is their hoovers, which are very, very good.
And you can help them dig in the snow as well for food. So as I say, it's well designed at both ends, you might say. When animals are hunted now in East Iceland, the meat is still made available.
Yes, you. If you want to hunt a reindeer, you have to apply for permission, and there are a lot more applications than there are permissions. So it's kind of like a lottery. If you're lucky, you get a permission, and you have to apply. You want to hunt either a male or a female in this specific area, and if you get a permission, then you have to hire a guide. Which will come with you and make sure everything goes according to plan. When you have your reindeer, you can keep the meat.
Maybe not a delicacy, but it's certainly considered to be a fine food in Iceland, reindeer meat.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm reading here about the lifrapilsa, the sausage that was made from reindeer liver and fat, which accumulates as well. That sounds a bit less appetizing.
Yeah, I don't think there are many people who do that today.
No.
But that's of course people used everything.
Yeah, it was nose to tail eating, wasn't it? So we've discussed the laws around hunting and the fact that a permit is needed and the fact that there are many more people seeking those permits than permits themselves. Let's move around to another part of the exhibition. Because here we have a reindeer. Tell me, and it's a magnificent beast. Tell me about this creature in front of us. How did he or she get here?
Well, he was hunted here up in the Highlands, and has been a part of this exhibition almost from the start. And he was there, a man here in town who, now I'm not sure about the word, what's it called when you...
He stuffed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
he stuffed the reindeer.
Yeah. And it's
he's a taxidermist.
Yes, exactly. And it's very, yeah, it's quite nice to be able to come so up close and see their fur and the antlers and everything.
And this is the selfie spot.
Yes, you can take a selfie with a reindeer here if you'd like. You don't always get the chance to do that.
No.
But,
well, we might just do that. I do want to just talk about what else is here at the museum.
Yes.
On the other side of the building, which is also part of the permanent exhibition alongside what we've been discussing here about the history of reindeer in East Iceland. And on the left-hand side of the museum, the other part of the program, I'm disobeying these arrows on the on the floor here, we're going the wrong way. But the rural household and the Bathstova, which is an old Icelandic house. So let's talk about what's on this side of the museum.
Here we have things from our collection, some old items from the area where we try to show how people used to live and how each household had to be self-sufficient with everything in the old rural community, where people had to make their own food and clothes.
Had to make everything, because here's a workbench.
Yes, exactly.
Which is not quite as sophisticated as one you might buy these days, but everything's there, all the tools are there.
Yeah. Yeah, because of course you had to make almost
tools.
Everything.
Yes. Yeah.
By yourself.
What's this machine here? I want to say some sort of spinning wheel. It looks, but it's probably not.
No, it's to make thing from iron.
Right. Because at the top here there is what looks like a small barbecue. I guess that's where these rocks would be heated up, and you would melt the iron there. But there's a wheel here which you would turn by foot as well.
Yeah. To keep the fire going.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bellows there at the bottom, in fact, yeah. I mean, you think now as to the processes that people would use to make machinery or items out of iron, and you think about how it was done when this machine was used.
Yeah, exactly.
And you do wonder sometimes how people survived in Iceland. It wasn't an easy place to live.
No, definitely not. And it, you had to... I mean, life was about work from morning to evening, from like when you were born until you died. It was constantly, you had to be, you know, on top of everything. And of course, each season has its jobs. You had to like gather the hay in the summer, and in the winter you would have to, you were making things from the wool and on and on. And of course the houses that people lived in, the turf houses, they also you had to keep them fit or in the right condition.
Yes,
because that was also a lot of work, because they would, of course, it's like a living material, you could say.
Yes. This is a recreation of one of those.
No, this is the authentic living
this
room
is the
from
actual
from the farm Brekka in Hróarstunga, which is here in this area.
And so this is the roof that people would have had to maintain, and it is constructed with various planks of wood. You can imagine the Icelandic climate is going to absolutely batter something like this.
And then you would put, of course, we have some branches here that you would put on top of that, and then the turf on top of that. We can't have the turf on the roof here.
No. So, I mean, DIY in these days took on a whole different...
And actually this farm is pretty special, because the family who lived there last lived there until 1964.
Wow.
So there are still people here in town who knew that house very well.
My goodness.
And in 1969 it was taken down piece by piece, and that's why we could rebuild it here in our museum.
Is it possible to go inside?
Yes, it is.
Let's go around to the other side and have a look inside the house that... How many people would have lived in?
Well, I don't know, 10, 12.
Really? As many as that? Because it doesn't look very big.
No. But of course, this is just one part of the house, but of course, the part where people spent most of their time.
Yes.
And here, I know it's not maybe good to talk about pictures in the radio, but we have a picture of the house.
As it was.
As it was,
yes,
yeah.
In its original location.
And the living room would be was on the second floor, and underneath they would have the stables with the cows, so the warmth from the animals would come up to the...
Underfloor heating.
Yeah, underfloor heating, exactly.
Well, let's step in. It is dark, it is small, it is cramped. I can see how you might fit 10 or 12 people in here, but it wouldn't feel very comfortable, I don't think. One room here has two beds, two single beds, three, actually.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, the furnitures are not the same as the ones that were in the house itself. So I'm not sure how it was.
But there's
there.
Not much room for, no, exactly. for beds and for
definitely
furniture.
There would be two people in each bed then.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah.
I mean, these rooms are... Well, there are two of them. They're both very small. You get a sense as well of how cramped it is because the roof is so slanted at such an angle. So if you're standing on either side of this, there isn't a lot of room to stand up.
Here people spent most of their time. Here they would sit on their beds and eat their food and you know, do all the things you need to do with the wool, knitting and spinning and all that stuff.
And it's a marvelous job that's been done to not recreate but rebuild this house here in the museum.
Yes, definitely, and it's very nice piece. It's nice to for people to or it's interesting for people to come in here, and especially like kids. We get a lot of school kids to our museum. From kindergarten and up to the high school, and it's always very, fun to see the look on their faces when we try to ask them to imagine living in houses like that. Some of them think it's very cozy to be like all the family together in one room, but of course the thought of that might be cozy, but I think
try it in January.
Yeah, exactly.
When this house is actually outside and not built inside the museum, you can hear the wonderful creaking of the floorboards as well here. A wonderful sound. I wonder if that would get irritating after a while, though. Maybe, I don't know. And also, next to this rebuilt and transported house, you've got some other artifacts from, as the name of the exhibition suggests, life in rural Iceland. I want to move around maybe here to some of the items that would be found inside homes. There's a beautiful clock here. Beautiful grandfather clock.
Yeah, this clock comes from a school in Eiðar, which is here in this area, and it's made by Ríkharður Jónsson, which was a famous artist. And
I see the name of the school there on the top, Eiðar School.
Exactly. And here down at the bottom we have the monster from the lake, which this town stands by.
I wasn't able to find it last time.
No, I have never seen it, but I know it's there. Definitely.
It's definitely there. Definitely. It is a beautiful item, a beautiful clock, and there are other artifacts and objects that would have been found in Icelandic homes. Should we finish in what feels like would have been the living room, or maybe the study, or items from both of those?
Yes, here we have a house or things from which maybe represent little bit higher class, you could say.
Yes,
I mean, you would not find these stuff in a small turf house, these things.
No, there's a typewriter and there's a sofa and there is a beautiful writing cabinet, you might say, a writing bureau.
Yes, and these things all belong to the first man to be employed as a forester.
Okay.
Guttormur Pálsson, he was put in charge of the Hallormsstaðir forest site in 1909 and remained head forester there until 1955, because here Hallormsstaðir forest is the biggest forest in Iceland and the first forester was employed there.
There's another beautiful grandfather clock, and there is a copy of Morgenblad, which is on the writing bureau. I want to see how old this is. Is that 1928, I think?
Yes. January 1928.
Well, thank you so much for showing me this side of the museum. Any plans for any future exhibitions that you can tell us about now?
Well, we always try to have some new summer exhibitions, so we haven't decided, fully decided what we will do next year, but this this fall we are having a very nice cooperation with the Culture Center here in Egilsstaðir, where we will put up an exhibition there about the artist Kjarval, Jóhannes Kjarval, which because we have in our collection a big collection of his personal items, so we are going to have this exhibition there, and along with that some educational program for kids as well, and that's all happening in the fall.
Fantastic. Well, a link to the museum up on the page accompanying the show from Roving English Radio. Elsa, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Very much enjoyed my second visit back here to the East Iceland Heritage Museum in the capital of East Iceland in Egilsstaðir. It's Roving English Radio. I'm Darren Adam, and you can get in touch anytime. We are english@ruv.is.
There is more from RÚV English with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. RÚV English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.